So tonight is the third week of this 7 week metta course, and we're just going to expand the categories that we've been looking at one more again, as we will pretty much every week. And this week we're going to look at the category called, it's usually called the dear friend. So this is all of a sudden things are going to get a little bit more difficult. When we're doing self can be difficult for other reasons, and metta, those are considered the easy categories generally, especially metta because you look up to this person, so it's very easy to feel thoughts of loving kindness towards them. Now you have your dear friend. It gets more complicated in several ways. One of them is that, dear friends can be dear friends, and still sometimes they've done something that really bugs you or annoys you. Or, there might have been stuff back there, right? But they're still your dear friend. So there tends to be more possibility of there you are sitting there thinking of your dear friend and saying the phrases, and what comes up is this story about that time that they did that thing and they said that and then I said this and then we didn't talk to each other for 2 weeks, but it's okay now. We have friends like that, right? We all have dear friends like that. So just be aware that the nature of the practice at this point, because we're dear friends are like equals. So as soon as you're dealing with a sense of equality, you get that mixture of emotion much more likely. So, how do you choose your dear friend? It's best if the person is alive. It's, and this is, you see this recommended in many different places. The reason this is important is when they're alive, it's much more, it's easier sort of have that sense of connection to them than if they're not around anymore. Then traditionally, I'm talking about traditionally, then I'll talk about now. Traditionally, it was said that you should never choose someone of the opposite sex because there was all this these issues around attraction and that sort of stuff. Well, that's what they said when they wrote these teachings down 2,000 years ago, right? We're a little more perhaps sophisticated, perhaps whatever, more in the know. Now it's like, so now the best way I can phrase this is don't choose someone to whom you have attraction for in that way. Because that's going to just complicate things. And so it doesn't have anything to do with sex or sex as in, male, female, neutral, intersex, all these different ideas of sex and sexuality anymore. Just don't pick someone who there's this sort of vibe underneath. The reason you pick them is like, oh, it'd be kind of nice, actually. You just don't want to go there, okay? Just don't complicate things more than you need to. And so, for this reason, you shouldn't choose a life partner. Because the partner's all that's always going to be there. It's always that complication is always going to be there. So you don't choose someone. And you should be able to actually visualize this person. So it helps if you have a clear image of them. Or, as we were talking somewhat last week, sometimes, visualization for some people is really hard. Well, maybe you've got a really good picture of them at least. Something you can look at that sort of help you connect in that way. We're talking about loving kindness for all beings. Your dear friend could be your dog or your cat. Or your parakeet, I suppose. I mean, what some being that isn't human could be, then that could be the person. The the object of connection that you make that connects with you most deeply. That would be a perfectly fine dear friend. You know, if we're going to eventually have matter for all beings, we got to sort of have to. This is one way to bring those things in, and for some people, that's the person. That's the, you know, the connection, the being that they connect with most. So at this point, we also start to have to be a little more careful. And I talked about this a bit last week. I want to talk about it more this week, about what are called the near enemy and the far enemy. So in this teaching, all of the Brahmaviharas have what are called near enemies and far enemies. The near enemy is something that sort of looks like the Brahmavihara, but isn't. And the far enemy is the opposite. So the near enemy of metta is wanting, desire. I'll have thoughts of loving kindness towards you. Oh boy, you'd better have loving thoughts of loving kindness towards me. There's an expectation built into the energy that you're trying to put out that you're going to get something back. And this is like, it's sort of like human nature, right? You know, I'm putting all this energy. I should get something back. Don't go there. In fact, if you're choosing someone because that's what you think you're going to get, choose someone else. It's really that simple. Just don't go there. But it's sort of like, you know, even no matter who you choose, at some point you're going to get caught perhaps in that mode of thinking. Just be aware of that. Be mindful that that's something that could arise. Mindfulness and metta are interrelated in these sorts of ways. So the far enemy, as I said, is the opposite of metta. So the far enemy is ill will. Instead of, oh, I want you to be safe, happy, healthy, and at ease, I want the opposite for you. Like, here comes a dear friend into the room. There we go. He wants to meditate with us. Anyhow. So the far enemy might also rise, even with this dear friend. Like I said, there might be this like moment or this time when things weren't so cool. And that's the story that's going to arise in the mind. And with that story, there's going to be ill will. So just be aware that that also is a possibility. And I want to share a couple of pieces of reading here too. This is from the Dhammapada, and it's talking very directly about loving kindness. This is the first two verses of the Dhammapada. So for those of you who aren't familiar, the Dhammapada is sort of like these poetic sayings of the Buddha, and they've been organized into a variety of categories. But this is how it begins. Phenomena are preceded by the heart, ruled by the heart, made of the heart. If you speak or act with a corrupted heart, then suffering follows you as the wheel of the cart, the track of the ox that pulls it. In other words, it's inevitable. It's always going to be there. If you act or speak with a corrupted heart, not a heart that isn't full of loving kindness. Then the second verse is, phenomena are preceded by the heart, ruled by the heart, made of the heart. If you speak or act with a calm, bright heart, then happiness follows you like a shadow that never leaves. Once again, it's always going to be there. So this is the first thing that went into the Dhammapada, these poetic verses of the Buddha. And I don't know if the Buddha organized this book, I don't think so. I think this is something that came after. People collected these pieces and organized this sometime, several hundred years after he left his body. But it's interesting to me that this is what comes first. It's all about your heart. What's in your heart? It's what metta is all about, in a sense. And metta is a direct response to these two verses. And we have to sort of be conscious that we speak and act with a calm, bright heart. I like that image, calm, bright heart. I also wanted to read something from Sharon Salzberg here. And here she's talking about what happens sometimes, as I said, with they're thinking about your dear friend, and that whole story about that time they did blah 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 comes up. This is a form of aversion. And she's talking about understanding this, I guess would be the best way to describe this. There is confusion in contemporary society about how to relate to feelings of aversion. For example, it is difficult to understand the difference between feeling anger and venting anger. When we undertake a spiritual practice, it is important that we are open to all that arises, that we recognize, acknowledge, and accept everything we feel. So this applies, of course, also very much to mindfulness. And this is where I think mindfulness and metta intersect so clearly, is that even as we're saying the phrases, there'll be times, even as we're sort of saying the phrases and visualizing and tuning into the meaning of the phrases and all everything that we've been talking about, what's going to arise is something that isn't all sweetness and light. In this case, some memory of when that friend acted like a jerk, or you acted like a jerk and they got mad and blah blah blah. I mean, who knows? Friends, right? I mean, that's how things are. We have a long conditioning of self-deception, of keeping certain things outside the sphere of our awareness or repressing them, overcoming our denial and repression and opening to states of aversion can be very healing. But in the process, we may pay the price of becoming lost in anger if, through misunderstanding, we indulge it. Most contemporary psychological research shows that when one expresses anger quite often in one's life, it leads to the very easy expression of anger. Expressing anger becomes a habit. Many people assume that we have a certain amount of anger inside, and if we don't want to keep it inside, we have to put it outside. Somehow, if it isn't outside, it's going to be inside forever. So we have to get it out, right? Anger seems like a solid thing. But in fact, we discovered that if we observe carefully, that anger has no solidity. In reality, it's merely a conditioned response that arises and passes away, just like everything else. It is crucial for us to see that when we identify with these passing states as being solid and who we truly are, we let them rule us and we are compelled to act in ways that cause harm to ourselves and others. Our opening needs to rest on the basis of non-identification, recognizing aversion or anger in the mind as transitory is very different from identifying with them as being who we really are and then acting on them. So, in metta practice, when this sort of energy arises, number one, it's always good to, there's that layer of mindfulness that's going on and while you're practicing metta, then you go, oh, there's that anger, there's that aversion, there's that old story about this person, blah, 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 blah. It's okay to actually stop saying the phrases for a couple of minutes and drop into the body, do all the things we traditionally do when we're working with a difficult mind state in mindfulness. And then once you've sort of seen it for what it is really clearly, then it could be a time to go, okay, now I'm going to go back to the phrases. And instead of going through that story and having all the feelings of ill will and aversion that are involved in that story, I'm going to wish this person thoughts of loving kindness. I'm going to consciously choose not to get caught up in that story. And This is a skillful thing to do when we're not just doing it because we're averse to what's arising in the mind. Like you can't just sort of leap to, oh, aversion's arisen, I'm going to do something about it and both. Now you have to sort of tune into what's going on and be careful not to use metta as a way of spiritual bypassing, of like, oh, that's it's not good to feel that way. I'm going to just be really pure and do metta instead. We have to acknowledge the fact that, sure enough, sometimes my mind, heart mind, is full of aversion of some form or other. And acknowledge it and be okay with it. And then you can shift back to the thoughts of goodwill for that person. There's some care needed here. It's really easy to turn metta into a way to avoid anything unpleasant. And that's not skillful or useful. It's just going to sort of put a little band-aid over a gaping hole. Doesn't work. Never works. It's better to sort of tune into what's really going on and be okay with that. Ah, okay. So here we are. Same phrases that we use for the benefactor. So you might have, at this point, after a couple of weeks of practice, have developed slightly different versions of some of these phrases than I've been using. Perfectly all right. I've even had some teachers say to me, you might have slightly different versions of the phrases for different people. Slightly. Note the word slightly there. You don't want to start getting too wild because then it's harder to sort of keep the mind concentrated as you switch from one person to the next. You have to remember to switch the phrases, and it just adds to the a layer of confusion to or possible confusion to the whole process. It's also, as I said before, when we're thinking, about what the phrases mean, well, this is your dear friend. You probably actually know them a lot better than your benefactor. So you probably have a really good feel for what these phrases would mean for this person if they're your dear friend. So really tune in as much as you can to that idea and that these phrases, to be safe for this person means maybe that exactly the same as you, but maybe it's there's because you know their history and you know their story, there might be a different flavor to it. Things that happen in their past have made their need for safety or how they express safety or feel safe different than you. So we have to sort of, as best we can, because, and the more we do this, the more we tune into what these phrases mean for the particular person we're practicing for, with, the more important it is, and the more connection we're going to make, the more we connect at the heart level. But remember, you're not saying this for them. You're saying this to change your heart mind's habit of not always being full of loving kindness. It has to do with them, only that you've chosen them at to be the person that you can connect with and have these thoughts about easily. Don't feel bad about, because most of us have more than one friend, right? Don't feel bad about choosing one particular person and saying, oh, but now I'm leaving all these other people out. It's not about them. It's about changing our heart mind in our habitual patterns of mind. That's what this practice is about. So don't feel like you have to, don't go into a big debate. In some sense, it might be wisest to choose the person you might think is easiest. Maybe because you can visualize them better. Maybe there's a, whatever. Just find a way to pick a person and have that person be the person you're going to work with for a while. And at times, and this is also true, a person who's your dear friend and 6 months from now, a year from now, maybe something's gone down and that energy isn't there anymore. Then it's time to change. But other than that, try and stick with the same person because it really helps the concentration part of this practice to have the same person there for a long time. Acknowledging that everything is becoming otherwise all the time, everything is always changing. And your relationships to people are just one of those things that change. So don't sort of, well, this is my dear friend, so I have to think about them in this way. Don't go there either. But change, it's going to change. And that's all right. There's nothing wrong with that. I have a little note to myself here. There's something with the attitude for saying the phrases themselves. It's not too tight and not too loose. Like, if it's too tight, it's like, it's like this sort of like this aggressive, may you be safe. It's like a forceful vibe there. Don't go there. But it's also like, maybe you should be safe. Yeah, I guess so. Can't be too loose. We have to sort of find a way that sits in the middle between those two extremes of not making this into a really forceful project, but not making it sort of loosey-goosey, which is has a lot to do with how we assume a certain posture and then we try and hold that posture. We're trying to take a posture that's comfortable, not too tight, not too loose. Mind body, same thing. What a surprise, huh? Okay, so that's the plan. And what we're going to do now is we're going to have a sitting period for about half an hour, where we're going to have a few minutes more of self. This is sort of tuned back into that. Then we're going to shift over to the benefactor, whoever you're working with as your benefactor. Spend about 10 minutes there, because the beauty of benefactor is it's easy to tune into a feeling of metta towards this person because you look up to them. And then shift from there, we're going to shift to actually working directly with the dear friend. I will sort of intervene verbally to remind you to switch at appropriate times. If, however, you're listening to this as the recording of this, you have to sort of keep track of that yourself somehow. And just trying to a couple of minutes for self, 10 minutes for benefactor, and then the rest of this practice time for dear friend. Okay, so now let's just find a comfortable seated position. Remember, the key here is comfortable. And I'll lead us in and then I'll turn off the recording. So, once you're comfortable, start thinking about self. What does it mean for you to feel safe, happy, healthy, at ease? Really spend the next 20 seconds or so, perhaps, thinking about that. And don't be surprised if it's changed from the last time you thought about it, because your life changes, and as your life changes, the meanings of these things change. So it's always good to review and think about it a bit, not just assume it's always going to be the same, because it won't be. Things change. And then, as best you can, however you can, whatever method you're using, get a sense of self, whether it's that image of self, even if, as I said last week, it's just like the Cheshire Cat, eyes and a grin sort of image of self, or that sense of self through the idea of there is a body. If you put together that whole mass of physical sensation that's going on, there's a body there. And then just start saying the phrases. May I be safe. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. And just continue on your own. So I want to have time for questions and things, but I don't want to talk about another aspect of this practice that up until now I haven't talked about at all. There's this formal practice that we've been talking about, this formal sitting practice, which you can also do doing walking practice, by the way. But what about the rest of the time? What about the rest of my life? How can I put this into practice in my sort of day-to-day life? And there's two things I want to suggest you might play with. Because, I mean, remember, we're trying to sort of have thoughts of love and kindness for all beings. One is, just like, you know, we've talked about in mindfulness practice, there's something happens, you know, you stop at a red light and then you stop and you take five mindful breaths, and you know, find things in your life that cue you to have thoughts of loving kindness for that person. So the cues might be more when you're interacting with other people. It might be every time you're in the checkout line at the store, and there's, you know, there's three other people in front of you, and there's the checkout person. Oh, these are all people. Why not have thoughts of loving kindness for all of them? Or I mean, you know, we all have different lives. Maybe you're, you know, you teach and you go into a school every day, and you sort of have interactions with other teachers or something like that. So every time you see another teacher, have thoughts of loving kindness for them. I emphasize this a lot when I teach this at the hospital, because, you know, there's lots of regular things. Every time, I encourage nurses, every time you go into a patient's room, say the phrases for them. That's how, start your interaction with them in that way. Whatever works. I mean, just, you know, find things that sort of remind you, just like we have things that can remind us to be mindful, remind you to sort of have thoughts of love and kindness towards the people you interact with on your just normal day. The other thing I found, and I do this from time to time, is to have what we'll call a metta walk. So there you are, you know, if you're like me, you like going for walks. So just decide, well, this walk, when I encounter a being, when a being catches my attention, I'm just going to say the four phrases for this being. So it might be, you know, some bird sitting in the tree, or a squirrel, or a person walking the dog. You say that for the person, you say it for the dog, you know, whatever. Doesn't just see what happens when you sort of just are in your, just going for a walk. And instead of sort of spacing out and wondering about, you know, what's going to happen on the stock market today, whatever it is you wonder about when you're wandering about, consciously choose to sort of make that walk a meta walk and have thoughts of loving kindness for every being that you encounter. Just see what happens. It's interesting because, first of all, you'll be surprised how many beings you encounter when you just go for a walk. It's amazing how many beings are out there. I mean, so if you, especially when you start taking in more than just people, unless you're, you know, you're walking downtown, maybe you're walking down a busy, you know, concrete walk street, you're not going to count a lot of other beings other than people, but then it'll be more people. Whatever works. Just see if you can sort of find ways to put this practice, this idea of wishing well to people, beings, wherever you encounter them. In sort of this informal, we'll call this informal practice. It's quite interesting to sort of start to play with this. and see if over time what's happening with this practice is we're changing our default mode of interacting with people and to one of every time we encounter any being, we have thoughts of loving kindness towards them, whether we say the phrases or not. But our mode of connecting to all beings is one of loving kindness. That's the ideal, of course. So I just wanted to mention this because it was like, it's important that we think of beyond the formal practice. The formal practice is really important. It really helps with our concentration. It helps us tune in on a deeper level to the meaning of the phrases. But this also can be, we can make it a little lighter and just sort of have this sort of informal, lighter practice and just make it integrated into our normal everyday life. See what happens. So that's all I have to say. So now, as usual, I'm going to sort of open the floor. If anybody would like to share anything or ask any questions or have any thoughts about anything, this is an opportunity for you to do so. And I always appreciate people having things to say or thinking things or asking questions. And don't feel like there's anything wrong if you have a question. Some people don't ask questions because they think, oh, this isn't a very sort of smart or intelligent question. What are they going to think about me for asking? Just don't go there. Just ask the questions. It's like you'll be amazed. You'll ask a question, and three other people are going to go, oh, thank God he, she asked that because now I don't have to ask it. Just turn on your mic if you want to. Once again, don't feel obliged.
Thanks, Barry. This was a really another wonderful meta episode. I was wondering what happens when you keep going along in this practice. So, like, let's say I'm at the point where my entire mind and body, everything is still. Like, am I going to be still repeating these phrases or be holding the image of this person in my head? Or is that, does that like temporarily go away? And then maybe it will come back if I lose that, state of mind.
At a certain point in this practice, just like in mindfulness practice, you get into such deep states of concentration that the noting or the phrases, they're not there anymore. But that's deep, deep country.
Yeah, sure.
And I've experienced that in the same, it's like basically the way I like to describe mindfulness and metta. It's like they're two doors into the same place. And externally, they seem really different and they feel really different. And then you get into the middle of this place, wherever it is, and it's all the same.
Okay, so if I'm feeling like a lot of peace and stillness in my mind, I shouldn't be worried that I'm not like constantly.
Go for it. Go for it. Don't feel bad for feeling peace and stillness ever, ever, ever.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Lindsay. Anyone else have anything they'd like to share? Okay. I have actually two bits of poetry to read tonight, just because I've been reading, just, I've been in a poetry mood these days, so I've been rereading things and coming across things going, oh! So this one I've actually, you've probably heard me read to before. This is from Hafiz, from his book, the book called The Gift. And this just sums up this idea of metta for all beings so beautifully in like 20 words. Even after all this time, the sun never says to the earth, you owe me. Look what happens with a love like that. It lights the whole sky. That's what metta does. It lights the whole sky. I just love this image because it's so simple. The sun never complains about, oh, you owe me something. It just keeps shining. That's what we want to be. I we're slowly, slowly headed towards being, where we're just full of loving kindness all the time. We become, there's a phrase in the sutta, it says, radiating kindness over the entire world. There's a description of what Lindsay was just talking about, where we just are so full of this that we just radiate kindness over the entire world. Seems like a useful thing to do to me. And then this is another book. This is a Mary Oliver book I actually I treated myself to recently. And this is actually her New and Reselected Poems, Volume 1. So this is sort of like a collection of poems. So almost all of these ones I've never seen before, because these are from like the 70s and 80s. And it has some really interesting pieces. And one of these I wanted to read tonight is about how important it is to understand that this practice is not about the other people you're offering thoughts of loving kindness towards. You're not sending out those waves and they're going to feel them. Though they might, by the way. But what's important is you're changing you. This is a practice to change your heart mind to one that is more radiant of loving kindness all the time. And I read this poem and went, oh, that's what she's talking about. In her own Mary Oliver way, right? It's called The Journey. One day you finally knew what you had to do and began, though the voices around you kept shouting their bad advice, though the whole house began to tremble and you felt the old tug at your ankles. Mend my life, each voice cried. But you didn't stop. You knew what you had to do, though the wind pried with its stiff fingers at the very foundations, though their melancholy was terrible. It was already late enough, and a wild night, and the road full of fallen branches and stones. But little by little, as you left their voices behind, the stars began to burn through the sheets of clouds, and there was a new voice, which you slowly recognized as your own, that kept you company as you strode deeper and deeper into the world, determined to do the only thing you could do, determined to save the only life you could save. That's what practice is about. Understanding that the only life you can save is your own. This is what equanimity means. But it seems harsh, but it's true. Because if you save your own life, if you fill your heart with thoughts of loving kindness more and more often, and become a radiator of loving kindness, man, it's going to really affect the people around you. It's really going to change the world in really powerful ways. I've been around people like that, and it's like you just feel it in a different way. You experience it in a different way. Anyhow, that's what I have to share tonight. So. May the beneficial energies arising from our practice here together today become the causes and conditions for the end of suffering and the awakening of all beings everywhere. So I'll see you all again soon. Most of you, a lot of you, I'll see on Saturday. If not, I'll see you here again next week. Also, I am, for those of you who are Denverites of any sort, I'm going to be teaching at the New Denver Sangha on Sunday night. So if you want to connect to the Denver Sangha, that's another possibility. Other than that, we'll see you along the Dharma Highway. as they say, and feel free to turn on your mics and say hi to your friends.
Thanks a lot,
Thank
Barry.
you.
Thanks,
Thank
Barry.
you.
Thank
Good
you.
night,
Good to see
everyone.
you guys, gals.
Thank you, Sangha.
Thank you, Barry. Thank you, Sangha.
Good night, Sangha. Bye.
Okay. Nice to see you again, Carl.